listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Well, I'm a king bee, buzzing around your hive. Well, I can make honey, baby, let me come inside. I'm young and able to buzz all night long. To buzz all night long. Well, when you hear me buzzing, baby, something else is going on. Well, buzz a while. Well, I'm a king bee, want you to be my queen. Well, I'm a king bee, want you to be my queen. Together we can make honey the world ever never seen.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day here in Hawaii, and I'm pretty excited. Obviously, some of you know by now, when we don't have theme songs, we have songs that will lead you into what we're going to talk about. And believe it or not, we're going to be talking about bees. And of course, you know, bees have played a role in human ways and human culture and society for many years. The story of Cain and Abel going to Israel, the children of Israel going to milk and honey land. They say men and bees have a lot in common. They both worship their honeys. So there's all kinds of things, and milk and honey land. And so bees, metaphorically and also realistically, we've had a relationship that probably most of us take for granted. Honey Cheerios and honey nuts and Cheerios, you just go on and on and on. But trying to look at it from the light side, but there's some bigger issues about us right now, and that is the honeybee. And I have some really good people in the studio today that's going to enlighten us and tell us the problems that the bees are facing and what we as humans are facing too. And I must say, now, some of you listening, you can call in 524-1080 and ask questions or give comments, but I want to tell you that there are people that say, well, beekeepers are enslavers, and they enslave bees and take the honey, make them work for that. That's one perspective, and I can appreciate that. But bees play a role in pollinating and making honey and what have you, and also to our music and our literature and on and on and on. So I have this morning with me Dr. Ethel Villalobos, Mr. Scott Nikita, and last but not least, Mr. Howard McGinnis. And Mr. McGinnis is a beekeeper and assisting the Hawaii University on the various the honeybee project, and we'll give more details. And Dr. Villalobos is also from the honeybee project, and man, they're doing some really good work. And there's an uphill battle against some of the mites and the pests against and diseases that are facing bees. So again, good morning. Thank you for joining me. If you would introduce yourselves again and tell us, Dr. Villalobos.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for having us. My name is Ethel. I've been working with the Honeybee Project since it started, which was in 2008. And we started just responding to some immediate problems like the new mites that arrive here. And since then, we have expanded to worry about new pests and to worry about farmers that need bees, to worry about beekeepers that are having trouble. So the project has grown quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But we're very happy to be here and share with you about all those things.
I'm Scott Nikaido. I work for the University of Hawaii Honeybee Project, and I'm currently the field technician.
Mm-hmm.
And I work, besides doing research, our field research, I also go out and do extension work with the farmers, the beekeepers, mm-hmm. and just finding out how they're dealing with the loss of honeybees.
thanks for having me on here. I'm Howard McGinnis. I'm probably one of Oahu's few full-time beekeepers. I've been beekeeping for 7 years. I've had 3 years with no pests, almost 4 years with the varroa mite, and now we're faced with a new, probably the more devastating pest in the small hive beetle. Working with Ethel and Scott, just seeing how this beetle functions, how it operates, how it multiplies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. I want to add to what's in a name? When you hear beekeeper and you hear Scott say he's a technician, don't be fooled by that, folks. These guys are, they have the steel nerves and something bigger, because I was out there and was fortunate to work with Howard. And recovering a swarm, a wild swarm or swarm that had gotten out, and thanks to Tina Cuisson, who is the producer of the Pathways of Paradise, which is aired on Saturdays on Olelo at Channel 49 at 4:30, she alerted me that there was a swarm of bees, and she had called Howard, and Howard arrived, and I want to put that up front first, because bees are threatened. For many reasons in the past, but they're also threatened by a simple act on the parts of humans. When there's a swarm, people run out, and quite naturally, the response, they don't want children stung, or they don't want to get stung, or their pets get stung. They've heard the story of the African bees. These generally are not African bees, so don't spray them with Raid. Don't just leave them alone, rope the area off, and if you could, real quick, and then we'll get on to the most technical part of this. What should people do, and who can they call when there's a swarm?
The most important thing people can do is react fast. The sooner somebody that's encountered a swarm gets a hold of a professional to deal with it, and by professional I mean somebody who's experienced in bees and not necessarily a pest control company, the sooner they get in touch with us, the sooner we can relocate it, we can add it to a workforce of pollinators. Here in Hawaii, we can't, unlike the mainland, we can't just pick up the phone and order bees.
Mm-hmm.
We're prohibited by law from importing bees into Hawaii, so we have to work with the stock that's here. So a swarm is very important to us. If people call quickly, we can be out there quickly. We can relocate them with a minimal of effort.
Mm-hmm.
And problem solved. If they wait, thinking the bees will fly on, a lot of times what they're doing is they're scouting out for a better place. And us as humans do a really good job of building houses that they like to get inside the walls.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Hawaii, because of the rain, There's always little pukas in the walls that the bees will go in.
Mm-hmm.
So the sooner somebody calls, the sooner we can stop them from, you know, moving in. The second thing we ask is that they not spray them. Just leave them alone and wait for somebody to show up. If you spray a swarm with a pesticide or you do a couple things. One is you reduce its value to us as beekeepers. Once the hive's been sprayed, we have no use for it. So we're going to be less interested in recovering it. You take a chance on killing the queen, in which case the bees are going to scatter all over the neighborhood, and you've taken a manageable problem with just one clump of bees, and you spread bees throughout the neighborhood. We ask that people just kind of, you know, either rope the area off or tell people just to kind of stay away. If you're around the bees in a swarm, swarms are very gentle. They're not really interested in stinging. There's no hive, so there's no reason for them to be defensive. They just want to go find a new place to build a house. So don't swat them. Just kind of keep your distance. Children like to throw things at them. They like to throw rocks at them. They like to poke sticks at them and otherwise disturb them. That can cause them to move on and sometimes accelerate their, you know, movement into a house. Most important and kind of a new thing that I'd like to add is sometimes people will know a beekeeper or somebody who's a backyard beekeeper. And with the small hive beetle, because it seems to be on the leeward side of the island and not the windward side of the island, we really don't want people to move them without knowing what they're doing. My company, Nalo Meli, has places in both areas where the beetle is present and where the beetle isn't present. So we can relocate swarms to an appropriate area. The biggest fear I have is somebody who has one hive in the backyard and isn't aware of the fact that the beetle can be present in the swarm, and then taking that swarm and transporting it to the windward side of the island, and now we've accelerated the movement of this new pest there. But the most important thing is to call somebody.
Mm-hmm. And don't spray them.
Don't
agitate them. Leave them alone.
Leave them alone. Wait for somebody to come and take them away. A lot of times we can take a swarm away in 10 or 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, it's an educational lesson for people, because when they watch a beekeeper removing a swarm, we're willing to tell people all about bees. We're willing to share our knowledge and our passion with the bees. So it's an excellent opportunity to learn more about a really fascinating insect, to learn more about what this thing does, about why the swarm is there. It's just a good learning opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So, just call, wait for somebody to come and take them away.
Don't spray, let them stay.
Yes, that's a good...
Okay,
I'll have to
because it's important, and it, I raise that and point that out up front is because that there's a shortage in a sense of bees, and a lot of them are impacted. Beekeepers, in a sense, are being impacted by the small hive beetle, the varroa mite, and the nasea, all of that. So you need, and you were mentioning the other day when we were out there at the hives, you and Scott, you mentioned something to the effect that it may be their way of housekeeping by leaving a healthy portion, just abandoning a portion of that hive and leaving and setting up a cleaner hive or avoiding the mite or what have you.
Yes.
So that's why folks out there, they need the bees, and you need to get them away, because there can be a problem with if some people are allergic, so you don't want to be stung, and don't bother them. But there, it all works out in the end, and I witnessed that just the other day. Started trapping. He's able to coax the bees in to a little box, and they go along just like the citizens here of the town of Honolulu now. We just go along to get along. So I thought I was looking at a bunch of voters going to the booth. But no, I'm just kidding. But anyway, I was impressed. And I've been around beekeepers, but to see you take this box, sit it down, and they decide to just walk in there as if you're the Pied Piper.
It's all in knowing what they're looking for, giving them what they're looking for.
Yeah, so anyway, that's small talk, it might seem, but believe it, it's important, because after you hear what's going on and the threats to possible agriculture. And now, let me ask you, either of you, is the bee, the honeybee that we know, is it native to Hawaii or native to America?
No, it's not native to mm-hmm. Hawaii or mm-hmm. to America. It was imported, but it was mm-hmm. in Hawaii. It was imported in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been here for a long time, sort of by itself, happy in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
The stock that we brought in those days, there was less movement of bees and bee products.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually pretty safe. That's why it didn't come with pests. It didn't
mm-hmm.
come with many diseases. It was in a happy state.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, as time has passed, in Europe and in the mainland U.S., a lot of movement, you know, air travel, movement of shipping of bees and things like that
mm-hmm.
have managed to spread a lot of diseases and new pests.
Mm-hmm.
So for the longest time, the bees in Hawaii were very safe. And it's not until very recently that we got, you know, this new couple uninvited guests, the mite first in 2007 and 2010, the small hive beetle,
mm-hmm.
Both of which are not even from Europe. The mite is from Asia, the small hive beetle is from South Africa, so they come from a long ways away, but have managed to spread in Europe and in, you know, well, the mite in Europe and the U.S., the beetle in the U.S. and the mainland U.S. So we're getting the last bit of a wave that has been happening,
mm-hmm.
and we have been very, very protected and innocent in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that revisiting the swarm issue, that we're always very happy when people, you know, call us about swarms. And normally we don't pick up swarms.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that goes, but we usually refer to beekeepers that, you know, we think may need or are looking for swarms. But sometimes we do take swarms as well, and
mm-hmm.
we put them to work as university research,
right,
you know,
right.
collaborators. But one of the things that is important for people, and you mentioned that some people want to see wild bees and, you know, feel like we're interfering with that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that we have now is any wild bee is pretty much doomed,
mm-hmm.
because they're going to get the mite, and that gives them a lifespan of about 2 years, and it's going to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
The beetle can kill them very, very quickly. And a month or two, if they get the beetle, they could be dead. So basically, we're all right now, you know, our mentality has changed, that if we see a swarm, we want to get it because we can save it. If we give them in a little box, like you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
if we can convince them to stay happy and provide for them, we actually are developing techniques and treatments to keep them alive. If we let them go,
mm-hmm.
they'll eventually die. And it's not the same. You know, so before 2007, there was a huge population of wild bees. Huge. And
mm-hmm.
they were doing great. But no longer.
Mm-hmm.
So we see it as a death sentence when they leave us.
I'm a witness to that. Where I live, I have a bottle brush tree out the bedroom window.
Uh-huh.
And I used to wake up in a palm tree and wake up to a sound
yeah.
as a symphony of bees, honeybees, and the bulbuls trying to eat them and chase them.
Yes.
But it was active and live, both introduced species. But nonetheless, it was vibrant.
Yeah.
And now I'm lucky if I can count 3 bees in a day
yeah.
on that tree. And why should we care? Now, someone I was discussing, and they said to me the other day, well, they're not native, but I'm reminded that, right, but most of the fruits that we eat now, most of the veggies that we place on our table is not native, but they rely on the pollinators. And who are those pollinators? Not all. Now, mangoes can be dusted by the wind and macadamia nuts by the wind, but by and large, bees
yeah.
serve the role as pollinators. And also, the second product is what? Honey? So what would you say to people? Should we be so concerned?
I think so. I think when we, in history, decided to go for the large-scale agriculture that we keep,
mm-hmm.
even 1 hectare is still, you know, large to
mm-hmm.
some extent, we committed ourselves to have managed pollinators
mm-hmm.
because those are products that come and go. So in real life, in a forest, you will have a balance between your bees and the flowers, and the populations, you know, of native pollinators to flowers will be sort of balanced. But the number of those bees won't be as high as we need for large-scale agriculture. Mm-hmm. So when you plant things that, say, even macadamia nuts improve with bee pollination. So if you plant large-scale, huge acreage of a particular crop, all of a sudden there's lots of flowers. And even if there were native bees, there just wouldn't be enough of them mm-hmm. to do the job. So that's what got us sort of in this weird cycle of having, in some cases, like in the mainland, they bring bees to the almonds. Because there, all of a sudden there's so much mm-hmm. there that you need a lot of bees working them. So we are sort of, you know, we made a commitment there, to, I think, to the honeybee. It's mm-hmm. like if you want these large scales, you're going to have managed pollinators. In other parts in say, in Latin America, the Mayans, you know, a long time ago used to keep managed pollinators. There were native bees, but they were still kept in little logs. They lived inside little logs. They could move them to, you know, pollinate their cucurbits, mm-hmm. you know, things like that, or to squash, and they would move them. So it was a version of that in a smaller scale. So we switched species and we made it bigger. Mm-hmm. So we're sort of, I don't know, don't want to say trapped, but we do have a link in a relationship that is very, very true, very real. I think the best for me was, and the wake-up call was when we got a call from a Filipino couple, and the wife was calling and saying, you know, you got to come and help me. My husband is the only bee in the fields. He gets up at 4 in the morning to mm-hmm. hand pollinate, you yeah. know, is the little squashes. And I was, I mean, that's a reality, and that's mm-hmm. not a, you know, a big person, a wealthy farmer. This is a very small
and
couple.
These are these small farm yeah. entities that we say in Waianae and Haleiwa side, and, yeah. and if they go, then we're not only left with the big producers.
Yeah.
And the lemongrasses and all those items and cucumbers. So what are we looking at right now? You see a decline in these. Just off the cuff, what veggies or fruits are we seeing a decline in? Is there anything?
Well, I think we know for sure that there's some veggies that need bees. So mm-hmm. all the things like squashes, watermelons, cantaloupes, all those things which are called cucurbits mm-hmm. are all in need of bees. They're almost obligate that they have to have bees. Then there's other things. So there's some plants that, you know, are completely sort of obligatory bee pollination. Then there's some other plants that improve their yield if they have pollination by mm-hmm. bees. So things like macadamia, even coffee, although it can do mm-hmm. produce, you know, berries on its own, will do better if you have insect visitation. So mm-hmm. So there's some things, more exotic fruits like lychee, you guys help me, Scott.
Lychee, you got longhan.
Longhan.
Yeah. All those, star fruit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So rather than just waiting for the wind to come by and haphazardly blow you to the next flower, yeah. You increase your chances of being transported.
Yeah.
More specifically, by having pollinators. But so what happens then? A lot of those smaller farmers may not immediately go out of business, but they may convert to other crops. So can you speak to that? What happens? I mean, we won't see them just overnight go out of business, but we might see a farmer's market with only cucumbers or whatever. If you could, can you speak to that?
Yeah, well, the biggest, that farmer that Dr. Villalobos was talking about, they were planting, I think, a 4-acre farm with winter melon.
Mm-hmm.
And winter melon is used for locally here for, like, in soups, in mm-hmm. stews, and also in the Chinese culture, they'll use it for candy. They'll make those sugar candies with the melon.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're losing their bees, they saw a decline in their production of winter melon. And for them, they're getting, on a really nice fruit, they could get like 99 cents a pound on their really nice fruit that they could sell to the markets. And as they started losing this yield, they actually started to switch to a new crop that doesn't require bees, such as dryland taro.
Mm-hmm.
And that the cost for production of dryland taro, I mean, it's easier because, you know, you do less work, but the income that they get, it's reduced in half or even in more than that. So their income went down as far as what they could make on a specific crop.
And like them, others will be impacted, and so you won't mm-hmm. have the variety and the yes. very assortments.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So you're, and it's not only, I mean, you may start seeing some of the fruit, but what you're going to be seeing and what some other places that you're seeing is just the look of the fruit is different. Because you may get one bee or a fly, the flies are good pollinators, may pollinate this crop, but because bees, you need so many visitations by an insect, which the bee does very well, that your crop may not look as nice as before. Mm-hmm. So a nice big round watermelon may look a little bit lopsided mm-hmm. or smaller just due to lack of insect visitation.
Now you hear Scott talking, and if you can believe it or not, this is the way he operates right with the bees, he and Howard. I mean, it's impressive. I was out there. I don't know. I guess, you know, you have to be careful what you do around kids and old folks like myself. I found myself donning a bee suit on and wearing no gloves, just barehanded, and standing there in a ball of bees taking pictures. And I'm still trying to figure out, was it the smoke from the little canister they used to calm the bees? Because it also must have calmed me, because I would never have done that. So, but, you know, so that was, I'm just speaking to Scott's ability, and you should see these folks. And this is coming out of the University of Hawaii now. And as far as funding, and this is something, you're talking about a very strapped financially. I don't know how they're doing it, but if you guys could speak to that, Dr. Villalobos, what is there funding? Does the federal government provide funding? Or is this just something UH took up? And if they did, I applaud them, because I think our legislators need to get with us and realize what's coming down the pipe.
Well, let's see. It's a mixed bag. The project started with some funds that were transferred from the Department of Ag to the university to help them respond to the project, the problem of the mites arriving. Mm-hmm. And as a parenthetical comment here, Hawaii was the only state that did not have any sort of bee-related, you know, infrastructure in mm-hmm. the system, because everything was so easy. We had great climate, you know, good mm-hmm. bees, you know, so there was no need to create a bee-related, mm-hmm. you know, project in either the university nor the state. So we were caught really unprepared when the mite arrived. So the Department of Ag had funding for a year, transferred some funds to the UH for 2 years. And this is how we got our start, you mm-hmm. know, in the project. So, and after that, those funds dried out, and we continued. Luckily, we were successful at getting funds from one from the federal government, a grant, and also a grant from the Environmental Protection Agency, mm-hmm. because we're going to be looking at pesticide use, and try to help reduce pesticide input in places where you need bees, because you don't want the farmers, now that the bees have become such an incredibly rare resource, mm-hmm. we don't want them spraying something that can kill them. So we are trying to educate them in ways of growing their crops that minimizes the impact of the bees. Mm-hmm. So we got a little bit of external funding to continue. And we're hoping also that the university might provide some funding, but it's always a hard thing to, mm-hmm. you know, to do. We don't have permanent positions, we don't have permanent funding. The state, the Department of Ag, has now created a position for a state apiarist, but the first one is in the Big Island. It's, I think it, there's, unfortunately, we wish there was a little bit more hand-in-hand collaboration, mm-hmm. because in most states in the mainland, the state apiarist and the people doing the research at the university work closer, partially because of the physical, you know, spacing of the islands. We don't have that right now. But so, yes, we our funding is sort of up in the air and mm-hmm. always tricky, mm-hmm. but we are a group right now of 5 people. We're all very interested, very devoted. We have great collaborators. We mm-hmm. feel very good that the beekeepers and some of the farmers have been very supportive, you know, here in Oahu and in the Big Island. And we're just really hoping that things can, you know, keep progressing, because it's a long-standing need. It's not mm-hmm. something that you just fix and forget about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're listening to the Carol Cox Show. If you're interested in talking with one of my guests, Dr. Ethel Villalobos, Scott Nikita, or Mr. Craig Howard, McGinnis, 524-1080, and we're talking bees. And there's some serious issues here regarding the bees, and we're going to get now into... I want to talk specifically about the pests that are that's bringing this problem and presenting this problem. You got your backs against the wall, you're strapped, you have no money. It appears, well, I got the feeling the day that I was out there, this was your problem. But the reality is, it's our problem, because when I go to the grocery stores, if I can't buy the eggplant here, or I can't buy whatever that I consume, then I'm going to import it. And we know that everything, every day we turn the news on, there's another request to up the cost of shipping and what have you. So, and we talk about sustainability, and from my perspective or opinion, I was shocked to learn that you were out here operating the way you were having to operate with such a thing looming. And my listeners out there, you know, there's certain things we can dismiss and say we can't throw money at. But when you're not feeding the people, I think there's no debate, you know, and then the GET and the taxing on the liquors and what have you and the drinks. I see something coming down the tunnel here that's what I saw out there and what I see at my home in the farm area out back there. There's a problem. So funding is a problem. But let's speak specifically to the diseases and the pests that are... Let's start with the varroa mite, if you could. Just take whatever you want to offer. When did it come here? How did it come here? And if you could tell us, why is it such a threat? And what does it do to... How does it impact the bee population?
Well, the mite came here, I believe, April 2007, Howard. And I think it was first found or discovered in Makiki, and subsequent surveys found that it spread throughout the island of Oahu. And I think when talking with beekeepers like such as Howard, they think it was been here probably a year before that. That probably in 2006 it was on this island, and beekeepers would just see weakening of hives, loss of bees, and the mite is so tiny that if you don't know what you're looking for, you don't know you have a problem yet. And mm-hmm. here, because we're so isolated, like Dr. Villalobos was saying, like no one knew what was really was going on. And the mite is such a... the way the mite causes a problem, and it's the major pest of all the pests to bees, because the primary reason is the mite actually will... is a vector for viruses. So just think of how a mosquito can infect a human with malaria. The mite will actually infect bees at the young stage with various viruses, such as deformed wing virus, like you saw in the field,
mm-hmm.
where the bee, as it's developing in the cell, if it gets fed on by a mite, would just be infected with various viruses, and one is the deformed wing viruses, and it just causes a developmental issue where the bees can't go out and fly because they have no wings.
Mm-hmm.
And other problems are shortened lifespan, and eventually all of this will lead into between 1 and 2 years your colony just dying, just mm-hmm. due to a lack of bees. And from this, will you open up your hive to multiple different predators, such as ants, wax moth, which just will come in and just lay cocoons all over your entire hive, and now the new pest, the beetle, would just come in and take over your hives.
Mm-hmm.
So I think... I believe prior to the mite showing up here, we had thousands of colonies. I know Howard had close to 200 colonies at the time. And
mm-hmm.
I think...
And that was in 2007?
Yeah, before 2007.
So you had 200 colonies.
I was managing 200 colonies.
Yeah.
And go ahead and...
And it probably went down to like 20, maybe?
I don't know. I think I estimate it probably lost... somewhere between 50% and 75% of the hives, just because of varroa, and mainly because we were the beekeepers were caught off guard. We had no defense against it. We really had no knowledge of it.
Mm-hmm.
And my chance to throw my thanks into UH for helping us with varroa. I think the reason we're in good shape. Or is in good shape today is because of them, but we got caught off guard, and varroa just basically wiped out one of the feral colonies and a good portion of the managed colonies.
Let me see if I can quantify this for the listeners. So you had 200 colonies, and just a rough estimate, each colony would produce about how much honey, how many pounds of honey per year?
Not nearly as much as I wanted them to.
Now, you must. Are you running for office?
Yeah. The average was, I think in 2005, was, 136 pounds per hive is an average.
So 136 pounds of honey per year per hive.
That was an average.
Okay.
You know, the thing that I have to stress, too, is in the big scheme of beekeeping, 200 hives is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There was approximately 12,000 colonies, you know, in the state of Hawaii. I'm thinking that the Big Island probably had 11,000 of them. So me with my, 200 hives is nothing compared to, say, a beekeeper on the Big Island that was running close to 5,000 colonies,
mm-hmm.
the queen rares that have an unknown number of colonies. I met almond growers that themselves had 13,000 colonies mm-hmm. of bees. So 200 is really, mm-hmm. it's enough to make a living. But
so 136 pounds on average of per hive, and now you're down to 20. That's a drastic reduction.
I back up, mainly because of the efforts of the UH Honeybee Project. The mite treatment that they were instrumental in, getting to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back up. I'm slowly approaching probably 100. And I had big plans to, continue increasing, and along comes us.
And along came the beetles and
those things. And it's like,
Now, so you have this. What are you doing, and how is this being treated? You spoke that the UH did something to kind of save you a few paces.
Right.
What is the UH doing in this case?
We were lucky enough to get a collaboration with a person who was developing a new treatment for the mite.
Mm-hmm.
And what they wanted, they were looking for warm climates to continue the development, do the field testing. So we decided, we did a little mini powwow here with people and said,
mm-hmm.
okay, do we want to go into this? Do we want to put our colonies out for this test? And UH gave some colonies for the testing, so did Howard, so did other beekeepers in the islands, and we went in as a group, as a team effort, and the UH Honeybee Project ran the field test, and with this new chemical, which is based on formic acid, which has been used for like 20 years
mm-hmm.
to control the mites. But the way it is done is this is an organic acid, so it's
mm-hmm.
considered, in Europe, it's considered an organic treatment, which
mm-hmm.
is great. Doesn't leave residues, it's all these good things. But it's pretty nasty in terms of, it makes it very strong fumes inside
mm-hmm.
the hive. So it's a fine line between killing the mites and killing the bees.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the ways that it was used in the mainland, you needed to have cold climates, cold ambient temperatures, would put us out of the run. So they figured out a way to put this formic acid into a gel. So it's like this little pad that feels sort of squishy like
mm-hmm.
jello.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we decided, we're going to run this and see what happens. And it turned out to be wonderful for us. It turned out to work really, really, really well. So that was done in July 2009, and we continued testing it for a year and a half. And we, got all the numbers and all the information to say, this works. The information was given to the Department of Agriculture that was able to actually produce an approval to use this new chemical. So we are now basically capable of using this new chemical and looking forward to an improvement in that.
I have a caller with a comment, a question. Caller, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very good show, because it wasn't for the bees, we won't have a beautiful garden. And I didn't realize the mites are still a real problem. And because it reminds me of the white flies. You remember the one time the white flies took over all the bananas and whatnot?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm glad that some conscientious people that really trying to resolve this problem, because let me tell you, boy, I don't have greens on, but the bees does help, you know, to pollinate everything. I wanted to know, you know, many years ago, I think before the mites problem came out, I mean, the virus thing came out, the larva of the bees are, you know, really diminishing the bees. There were an article about some scientists or some group of people were they had a little attachment on a bee. You know, like how the pigeons, they would send the pigeon and put a note? Uh-huh. That's how they used to telegraph their information or spy kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Did you know about that?
It may be, like, was it regarding... I think MIT and some other universities were putting radio transmitters.
Yeah, some kind of attachment. It was pretty cute, but I think, gee, how come they're using bees? Because doesn't bees have a short lifespan?
Yeah, here, typically in Hawaii, our bees will only, an average lifespan of a bee is only 6 weeks. And we think here in Hawaii it may be shorter than that. Typically,
how long?
Only 6 weeks. So they'll spend about three weeks in the hive and about an additional 3 weeks outside foraging. So the bees that you see, you know, pollinating your fruits and in your gardens are what I like to call your grandma bees, because they're the oldest of the entire colony going out there and foraging. So, yeah, those, that probably article that you're looking at, they're actually looking at bee language. And they'll actually, a lot of scientists say that the bees have a language. They'll do that dance language to locate, you know, a nectar source. And what these scientists were doing were probably tagging the bees that were observing this language, and they were recording their flight.
Oh, I thought it was kind of like a spy kind of thing, you know. No, because that caught my eye, and ever since then, I've been listening to talk radio, and there was this guy who was the head bee, president or something. He used to come on the talk radio, and he was talking about that mite thing, and I read articles, and I really took a whole new perspective on about bees. Oh, let me tell you, I handle bees like they were gold.
Yeah, most people do, like, at these times, just to the loss of bees. But I had a question. Did you, are you seeing bees in your gardens right now?
Not bad. But I noticed the decline of them. But my garden has been growing real nice. And I was told by a horticulturist, my neighbor, she's a master degree, she graduated. She said, bumblebees are just as good. I've got a lot of bumblebees now instead of the honeybees. I don't have a big garden, but I do see honeybees coming, but there are a lot of them because I have a pocket where all the rubbish flies. I see a lot of bees come into my garage. And I feel so sorry. If I see them kind of half dying, I would gently pick them up and put them on my plant. But if they die, right, they would die happily on their whatever. No, honestly, it's something that I feel so passionate because I feel so... Now I know the importance, because like talk radio, they have this kind of conversation,
Well, I'm glad that more people like you are realizing the importance of bees. And when you say bumblebees, the bumblebees are very important in the mainland, but what we have here, the black ones, the big bumbly ones that are black, all shiny black, those are carpenter bees. And the black ones are the girls. And once in a while you see a golden one, and those are boys. And
the golden one is the boy.
The golden one is the boy, yeah. He won't be able to
stay here. I thought they were the female because my neighbor had a tree trunk and they were infected.
No, those are the boys. They're looking for girls in there. That's, you know, trying to find a good girl for him. But
what is the one with all the different color now? I never saw that before.
Which one with all the different colors?
It's past years. You know, the kind of spot design on it.
I don't know. There might be wasps.
Yeah.
There might be wasps. There might be not bees, but wasps. There are a couple different wasps. There are paper wasps. There are
yellow jackets.
Yeah. So
No, they're bumblebees. They're shaped like bumblebees.
Oh, it could be a crystal-winged hummingbird moth. Because that's a good-sized insect that goes around.
It's not a moth. It's a bumblebee, but it's a different color.
Okay.
You know, it's black, but it has a design-like kind of thing. And I said, wow, they must have, you know, greed. How...
Maybe another alien species interest.
who knows? I'm getting a lot of them, especially when the rainy days. I think they go in the gutter. And if they all come down in the drain dead?
Well, if you see one next time, why don't you collect it and put it in something? And I'm going to ask them to give their phone numbers and contact numbers. And if you'd like to call, you can call back in the next hour and continue this. We're going to finish this bit and then take a break.
Yeah, but now I don't live there for now. I'm having my house renovated. It just caught my attention. I do listen to your program when I can.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but can
you.
I have the number just in case?
Okay.
I can tell my whoever working there, you know, renovating the place, if they just see that bumblebee then.
Sure. It's the number at UH is 956-2445. 2445.
2445.
And that's the UHB lab number.
Oh, UHB lab.
B lab. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
You said C lab?
No, B lab. Honey B lab.
Oh, honey B lab. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And for contact information, you can contact B Project at UHB, that's BEE lab, at gmail.com. 808-956-2445, and it's Dr. Ethel M. Villalobos. Is it okay to give your email address, or is that sufficient?
The UHB lab one is good enough.
Okay.
We check it in daily.
Okay. And the same can be to get in touch with Scott and Kaido. And then, Howard, give us a phone number so when people find a swarm or just want to, I think they'd just be entertained in talking to you. You're wealth of knowledge. So if you real quickly, and we're going to take a break here shortly.
Well, I can be reached at area code 808-258-7296. Also, my email is Howard, H-O-W-A-R-D, at Nalo-Meli, Nalo-Meli.com.
Mm-hmm. And you have a company called Naeli Meli. What does that mean?
It's Nalo Meli. Nalo Meli is Hawaiian for honeybee.
Nalo Meli. Okay, honeybee. Okay. Well, folks, this is something, you know, I always ask when we sit on and talk on radio, I just don't like to be a talking head and getting you riled up. This is a call to action. If you are interested in taking an action rather than just absorbing information, pick up the phone and call the director of agriculture, who was recently appointed and approved by Mr. Cocobon, and contact your local legislators and ask them to be kind and give a little money for the honey or whatever, you know, come up with some kind of ring. But it's important, and you may not see it. I equate this to you being in the South or in the Midwest, where at nighttime, in the dark of night, you hear this rumbling. You don't know what it is, but you hear people screaming and the sirens going off, and you wake up in the next day, if you wake up, it's a tornado. And so here's a big storm of brewing here. I see. Now, this is just speaking from my standpoint. I could be wrong. We may end up having fruit flies to pollinate. Who knows? But for right now, I know the importance that we've relied on honeybees. So if you'd like to call the action, just call up and ask the governor. This is something important that we need to focus on. So we're going to take a break here. And again, my guest is Dr. Ethel Villalobos from the Bee Project. Or actually, what all do you do with the CTAR, the College of Tropical Ag? What, if you real quickly?
It is, like you said, it's a College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources. So it is a college that deals with agricultural problems. So there's people there working in all sorts of kinds of pests and, you know, projects involving farmers. So it's a very applied kind mm-hmm. of department. Mm-hmm. And we are a new creation in the department to deal with this problem.
Yeah, and folks, you don't know the importance of UH, but this, if you ever wanted to gauge what role do they play in our community, I think this is one of the perfect ones right here, because when there's food taken off your table, we'll get your response, I guarantee you. So, anyway, stay with me, and we'll be back in the second hour, and talk to you shortly. That's you'll be able to pick up some of this in photos at carolcox.com, CarolCox.com.
Well, I'm a king bee, buzzing around your eye. Well, I'm a king bee.
Talk show right after the news on K108.
You're listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Oh, inside I am doing.
welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, second hour. And again, we're talking bees and how they will, they're being impacted by the varroa mite, the small hive beetle, and gut diseases as Nosema. And we'll continue talking with Dr. Ethel Villalobos and Scott Nikaido and Mr. Howard McGinnis. So again, thank you, 524-1080, if you have any questions or seen some spotted yellow bee or what have you, anything, feel free to call in. And I ask that after you hear this, give a plug to the legislators and ask them if they could be so kind to throw a little money toward the honey. So anyway, but what I hope you take away from this show today is that As I say, a little slogan that I've come up with, let them stay, don't spray. And that speaks to the, there's a dire need for bees. And so don't spray them if there's a swarm that shows up. Rope the area off if it poses a threat or danger. And contact Howard McGinnis or other beekeepers. And Howard, again, your phone number?
Area code 808-258-7296.
And Howard will come with his little magic box and his flute, and he'll haul cart off the bees, and you won't believe it. They drive off. They were smiling and just as happy, waving to the homeowner after Howard took them, because they knew they were going to go to a better place. It was better than being sprayed with hot water.
Yep.
And there was a deluge of raid and some other insecticides and wasp spray. So don't do that, folks, because the bees can be used in a colony for both at the UH or Howard. And if you spray them with chemicals, they can't use them, because we don't want chemicals in the honey, because people do eat honey, regardless of what we think or what our opinions are. It plays a very important role. So anyway, we were talking about varroa mite.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anything you want to close on that, and then we'll move into the small hive beetle, which is a ugly little fellow who looking for a living something for nothing. That's what I describe him as.
Yeah, and you got to see that firsthand.
Firsthand, and they were scampering, and I didn't realize how bees spend energy chasing this beetle who has invaded and lays its baby or larvae, and the larvae feeds on the thing. So you got to see this, folks, to believe it. I wouldn't want to be a bee today.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I think Dr. Villalobos was going to explain more, but the small hive beetle was found May 2010 on the Big Island. And a lot of the beekeepers in Hilo were losing colonies within 1 to 2 months. And the way that the small hive beetle impacts the honeybee is an adult beetle will fly in, typically during at dusk, and they'll hide out, and they're opportunists, so they'll wait till the hive starts to weaken or there's a few bees that can protect the colony, and they'll start laying eggs. And those eggs will hatch within 3 days and turn into larvae. And it's the larvae, that the babies, that cause the problem, where they'll actually crawl around, feed in the honey,
mm-hmm.
feed on pollen, and the worst thing, they'll feed on the baby bees and eat them. So essentially what you'll find is the bees don't like this, so they'll actually swarm and abscond and leave the colony,
mm-hmm.
and you'll be left with a box full of honey, dead bees, and just beetle larvae crawling all over.
Mm-hmm.
And for a beekeeper, I mean, that's one of the worst things, because it essentially damages their equipment and makes mm-hmm. it, you know, not usable anymore.
Now, you spoke about the acid for the uh-huh. varroa mite, and I noticed you had the beetle blaster, or a little trap that you were trying to capture, that you put inside
the hive.
Hives. Mm-hmm. Can you describe that and share with the listeners?
Well, the theory of using traps, essentially, mm-hmm. is the bees typically do not like anything in their colony that, you know, that they don't want. So if you were like a little cockroach that would enter the hive, you'll pretty much get attacked and cleaned out. So the beetle, and what the bees are doing to the beetle, is they're trying to corral them and force them into areas where they'll hide. mm-hmm. or not do any damage to the colony. So what these traps are doing is they'll have an opening for the beetles to crawl in. So it's these plastic tray-looking containers that you put in a colony with small holes on mm-hmm. the top of the container. And this container is filled with oil, like vegetable oil, mm-hmm. and the bees will try to corral these beetles into these traps. So, and essentially kill them in there. They'll mm-hmm. drown in the oil. And in Hilo, what we saw in the field, Howard showed you probably a trap filled with about 20 to 30 beetles.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine 3 to 4 times that amount in the Big Island. That's how bad the problem is.
In one trap. I got a call it here. They went away. Anyway, so watching that, it was clear to me that this was an uninvited guest, and the bees were chasing it. And you would see this chase, this game of cat and mouse going on between the bee and the beetle.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of cleaning the nest or out foraging for food or doing its chores, it's now expending energy
to
doing something to defend the colony.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite interesting, mm-hmm. just watching it.
And I think what happens, too, is that the numbers of beetles, if you let it get to the point where it's in the Big Island, where you have sometimes almost equal number of beetles than bees, is there's no way the bees can keep up with this.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much energy having to be spent dealing with these uninvited guests, as
mm-hmm.
you put it. And what we've seen are numbers that are way, way, way higher than
mm-hmm.
what normally you would expect. Recently, about a month ago, we had a visitor. It was a researcher from a bee lab, from the USDA bee lab in Louisiana. And her name is Lilia de Guzman, and she came, and she's worked a long time with these beetles, and she was totally surprised, so taken aback by the density and the numbers of beetles that she was seeing in these colonies. And I think what happens, and this is the big difference that we have here, is that during winter time in the mainland, the beetle numbers will go down, and the beekeepers will get a rest break, and things will reset. But here, because there's no winter, we just have a continuous growth of the beetles, a continuous increase in numbers that results in tremendous population pressures for the bees. So we're seeing something very different. I thought it was tremendous. It was, I guess, in some weird, strange way, reassuring to hear an expert say, this is different. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you do have a big problem in your hands. And I do want to put a plug in for the beekeepers in the Big Island.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have lost tremendous amounts of bees. They're working very hard to try different traps, different techniques, and they're soon losing bees.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, you know, we are trying to fly over there and do projects over there, but it obviously the physical distance is a problem, but they are having serious problems that
mm-hmm.
we will be experiencing here very
mm-hmm.
soon as well.
I have a question, a caller here. Caller, go ahead with your question and comment.
Okay. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Hello? Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can
yeah,
hear
we
you.
Can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. On the other channel, they have this little radio station. They always have this advertisement for Nature Bee, and they say it has all the potential, all the different things in the bee pollen, and they said there's a between it and other bee pollen is potentiated. What does potentiated mean? Can you tell me?
I'm aware of the product, but I'm not... I don't really know anything about it. I'm not sure what they're adding or what. I'm just aware. I've heard the.
You've heard the same commercial.
Yeah, I've heard the same. It's like a almost like an infomercial.
Yeah.
On the AM stations, and they talk about Nature Bee. But other than just, you know, knowing, being aware of it, I really don't know anything about
it.
Caller, we're here speaking to the nature of bees. I understand, but let me, we're talking the nature of bees and their status and the threats. So I don't want to engage in trying to define what they claim in a commercial or what have you.
No, I just wonder what potentiate means.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, I'm sorry, Carl.
So what? I want to be respectful of them. I would encourage you to call that station and probably get it firsthand.
Okay,
but feel free to call back anytime on any subject.
Okay, thank you.
Aloha.
Appreciate your help.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Well, I mean, to answer, well, I know you had a question on the pollen itself, but what people are using now locally here is, I think there's a bigger movement of natural products. So mm-hmm. pollen is a really good like protein source. So a lot of your so-called vegetarians and your mm-hmm. people who want to be healthy are using pollen and bee products mm-hmm. in their daily, you know, diets.
Mm-hmm.
So pollen is a really good source of protein for yeah. people that, you know, don't eat meat, and they'll put it on.
Well, maybe they should be calling in, too, because if we...
Well, I mean, you could actually get into your in touch with your local beekeeper, and
yeah.
they can actually collect pollen for
yeah.
you. And
okay.
although it's a pretty hefty price, but, you know, it's really yeah. good alternative help.
But, you know, for the call, I you know, just would be absolutely ridiculous for me to try and define.
Hello?
But yes, got a comment, a question?
Yes, potentially they break the cell wall with the pollen. And I wonder about that. If you just eat pollen, you don't really absorb it very well because of the hard shell around the pollen kernel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One concern that we have now, I mean, some people do collect pollen for sale, and it, as Scott mentioned, mm-hmm. it's sold at a high price. One of my biggest concerns now is with the small hive beetle. The small hive beetle likes pollen,
mm-hmm.
So it's going to limit also the ability of beekeepers to have that product, because the moment you have a source of pollen, you collect it at the entrance of the hive. You basically put a really narrow little entrance,
mm-hmm.
and the bees have to wiggle there as they come in. Some of the pollen that they bring in falls off, and
mm-hmm.
that's how the beekeeper gets fresh pollen. The beetles will love that. And
mm-hmm.
so there are all sorts of, you know, new problems arising
mm-hmm.
when we get these pests. The people trying to use pesticides to kill the pest means contaminating your hives, you
mm-hmm.
know, contaminating things that we take for granted as pure. You know, we think
mm-hmm.
of honey, we think of pollen as something really natural that we bring
right.
to our tables. And all of a sudden we have these weird additions that
mm-hmm.
are happening. In the mainland, one of the biggest chemicals that are found in hives are actually chemicals that are put by the beekeepers themselves,
mm-hmm.
trying to keep the hives alive.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to reduce that source of pesticides. We can't do much about what the farmers are doing right now. We want to concentrate and taking care of the bees in the most organic way possible, so that there's
mm-hmm.
no residues, no unwanted products
mm-hmm.
from the beekeeper side into the honey or the pollen that is collected by people.
Well, what I was saying is that the cell of the
yeah.
pollen is very indigestible, and that's why they extract
it. Oh, no, I know. The pollen is designed to travel and to withstand
mm-hmm.
the secation and everything, so it does have an outer shell, and only when it gets to where it's supposed to be, another flower,
mm-hmm.
it actually breaks open and lets the insides flow out. So
mm-hmm.
yes, I understand. I just wasn't sure if I was answering about a technical point or about a product, so
yeah.
that's why my
yeah.
hesitation. But yes, no, thank you for your
yeah.
for your call.
And maybe you could describe the beetle so we could tell what it looks like.
Well, okay, the beetle is about a third of a size of a bee, of a honeybee. It's almost black, and very, very dark, almost black and shiny. And it is shiny, but the two main characteristics, and it's hard to see unless you have really good eyes, is that antennae that it has have little sort of round ends. They're
club,
chubby, yeah. yeah, little clubs
stubby
on the
chubby.
End. And the covers of the wings, which are short, so you can almost see the butt of the little beetle. You can see the little segments.
Mm-hmm.
Most beetles, their wing covers go all the way to the end,
mm-hmm.
but in this you can see the rear end poking out. So you see little segments like you would in you know, something segmented in the back end of the beetle. And they fly like a ladybug. The beetles are not great flyers. They fly sort of out of control. You see them bumbling around. And they'll walk in and out of beehives. And
mm-hmm.
the bees try their best to stop them, and they play turtle. They crouch, and the bees will try to grab them and
mm-hmm.
sting them and buzz around them, and they can't do much about them. The group that they belong to is a big family of beetles. So the other things that look like that, a lot of them feed on fruits.
Mm-hmm.
If this beetle is pushed into a corner, it will feed on fruit. It will lay eggs on fruit.
Mm-hmm.
It will survive on fruit temporarily, but it certainly prefers the nutritious food that can gain
mm-hmm.
from being in a colony. So it's not super easy to recognize it unless you've seen it, but look for something
mm-hmm.
about the third of the size of a honeybee that is dark.
Maybe we should show, publish pictures so people could see it.
It is on our website. We have a little component there, a little link to the small hive beetle, and we'll be updating it soon with video and things like that. Mm-hmm. So if you Google bee CTAR, which is College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources, or Honey Bee Project, Google should take you to our website, and then there will be a link for the small hive beetle.
Thank you very much.
Right, you're welcome.
Thank you. Where does this bee originate?
You mean the beetle?
The origin, the beetle.
It's in South Africa.
So it was unintentionally imported here, and how do you suspect that it came here? And what are the possible ways?
The possible ways, well, it was, I think it was discovered in the U.S. mainland
okay.
in 1998 or so.
1996, actually.
Mm-hmm. And then it gradually spread throughout the southern parts of the U.S. And typically it's through bee movement, colonies that are infested with the beetle that people mm-hmm. will ship. You know, there's a big package bee business where the people would just put 5 pounds to actually weigh bees and say you'll have a 5-pound package of bees with the queen inside.
Right.
And they'll transport this around the U.S. For us locally here, it could have potentially come on a boat
mm-hmm.
with a swarm
mm-hmm.
or on an airplane
mm-hmm.
That was transporting your daily cargo.
Mm-hmm.
And just people weren't aware at your ports that, oh, there's a bee swarm that ended up in your cargo hold. It could have came through illegal shipping of bees here.
Mm-hmm.
People can get in touch with a beekeeper and say, let's keep it secret, and we'll put it in a FedEx box and ship it here. It could have came, some people hypothesize may have come on fruit, contaminated fruit, because mm-hmm. a beetle can live in fruit for a couple of days.
Let me ask, has there ever been any documented case of a hive coming in on Christmas trees?
I don't know.
I know the wasps.
Yeah. But a few bees could.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, now, you know, one of the, just digressing just a bit of why some probably went with, he didn't want to answer that question. See, when a commercial entity used certain terminology, I can't be expected and wouldn't dare to explain how they're using such terms. I just can't bring myself to, because it could be misrepresentation, it could be many things, so I can't speak specifically to that. But if you ask in a scientific manner, as that's a little different. But,
yeah.
You know, so I want to make it clear, we're not filtering what people ask. It's just that if a company says that this is harangadang doodle, don't ask me what does a harangadang doodle mean, because that's the spin. It could be their registered trademark, so we have to ask.
No, I feel the same way. I mean, I can think in the sort of ecological
right,
sense of you
right.
know where the pollen goes and why it's protected and is you know,
yeah.
but it's like you said, it's a lot different when it involves commercial products.
Oh yeah, and they you know, CDC and or the Food and Drug, those kinds of questions should be when. So that's why I call. I want to make sure I don't step over that line and start defining what they mean.
Yes,
so,
yes.
But one of the things with this beetle, I observed, speaking of pollen, if we continue on this path at this pace, how you're seeing an increase, you say, somewhat, but that comes on the heels of you working hard and you're in an outreach program. But what about others who couldn't sustain themselves or didn't reach and grab the life vest like you have with through CTAR or through your efforts with the bee project?
You mean the backyard beekeepers or small farmers? Or
yeah, whomever that found themselves going down for the third time.
Yeah, well, I think soon they're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I think this the bees have kind of sorted out varroa to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of a little balance that's taking place, and nature is through swarming, through the loss of feral colonies, and the hives grow up much quicker and swarm more often, and swarming is a natural mite control. But I think some of the people that are doing one or two hives are not tapped into what's going on. One thing to point out is that there really hasn't been anything in the news about varroa or the small hive beetle other than 2007. There was a lot of media coverage on it. And it just kind of fell from the news. A lot of people when they asked me, how are the bees doing? And I said, well, we're, you know, holding our own. They're surprised to find out that Varroa is still here. Mm-hmm. They think that Varroa has magically disappeared and that, you know, we don't have any problems anymore. And it's not true. It's just that it's old news and it's not covered anymore. Mm-hmm. The small hive beetle, as far as I know, other than one brief new press release when it was first discovered on the Big Island, there really has been no media attention to it. It's mm-hmm. almost like it's not acknowledged as a serious problem that it is. Mm-hmm. And with the, you know, the problem on the Big Island, the hives, you know, just crashing like crazy, you think it would have more coverage. You think mm-hmm. somebody would, you know, because this is big news, mm-hmm. but it's not being covered. I don't know why. It's a serious problem. It deserves a lot of attention. Again, I don't think there's been an article about, you know, small hive beetle, you know, in the paper or on the news. I think the most recent one was when the Department of Ag managed to get approval for the formic acid again. And that was a little media flurry there, and then it's died out again.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Carly. You got a question, a comment, right quick?
Yeah, I'm here drinking my Kona coffee and getting ready to cut up my avocados for lunch, and I'm thinking, what is the impact on the Big Island if we don't take care of our honeybees? And good morning, Howard, and thanks for all the hard work.
Oh, thank you. I'm starting to wonder what the macadamia crop's going to look like, you know, this year. I think there's probably enough pressures with weather and, you know, losses in hives. I think in some regards, nature will take care of some of the things that other pollinators will step up to the plate and fill those roles. We saw that in 2008 when the feral colonies died out. We saw an increase in carpenter bees and leafcutter bees. There were more moths, more flies. Nature kind of abhors that vacuum, and it'll fill it with something, but probably not as good as the honeybee. One thing that I'm concerned about is that as we do lose colonies and the pollination doesn't take place, the fruit isn't as good, the yields aren't as high, there's going to be more of a tendency to import from the mainland and from other places. And every time we bring in something, every time that we bring a shipment of something in, we're opening the door for another invasive species of some sort. So, with the honeybee dying off or having these problems, it's just opening up, a whole can of worms for other problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Well, what are the things that, backing up again to the subject of media coverage? Now, I must let my listeners know that I reached out to Neil Reimer at the Department of Agriculture because I felt that this was an important subject, and just because I place a value of importance on it does not mean the government have to. But when you strap for cash and you have an opportunity to educate the public and have an outreach for free, they apparently didn't think that this was a worthy cause, or because they Neil Reimer said that he would ask Darcy, and I even offered to have a phone call. And so I don't know what to say about this issue, but three strikes and you're out. I've invited this administration's people to come, and they don't show up or to call in. So we'll talk about that in this few shows down the road. But for you, the listener, I think what I've witnessed, and their backs are against the wall. I don't care who you are when you have a pest that you have no control over. And when they are working tag team, I describe it as the rural mite and the beetle working tag team, and then there's a third party that comes into this play, and that's the Nosema.
Yeah.
And this is a gut, I'll describe it as a gut disease for the listeners, but you, if the three of you can take it.
I think that's very descriptive. It mm-hmm. affects their gut system. It affects their ability to basically forage, function. It weakens them. There are two types of mm-hmm. this disease, and we, UH, is now collaborating with a researcher in Spain who's the world leader mm-hmm. on this disease. And we sent him some samples we collected, mm-hmm. and he started to look at those samples and get us the results. And it shows that we have a lot of the one type that is probably the most tricky one to diagnose and the most tricky one to treat,
mm-hmm.
which is not good news for us. I think why are bees that may or may not be responding like the ones in the mainland that have this disease is something very interesting. He's very excited about doing mm-hmm. that. I'm hoping that we might get some support to, again, bring this person over, because there's nothing like firsthand, mm-hmm. you know, as
right.
you know. So even though we can do a lot via, in, you know, phone or email, I would love to have this person who's a star, I guess, in the science on this subject to come and see our bees, to talk to beekeepers, to give us instruction, to give us the training, so that we can build the capacity at UH to deal with this problem. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's one very important thing that I want to address, and is the fact that we are new, we recognize our limitations, but we work really hard, and we made a lot of collaborations with established links with probably the expert on virus and bees that is from England,
mm-hmm.
and he's come here twice, and he's working with us, and we're doing research as a team.
Mm-hmm.
So we covered that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're covering the Nosema aspect, which is, again, like having diarrhea for the bees, having a very hard time, with this guy from Spain. So we want to build collaboration at the same time that we train our people here. So at some point we can actually stand on our own 2 feet and deal with the problem here at home,
mm-hmm.
and not require, you know, visits, random visits from random people, but to be capable of or understanding the uniqueness of our system.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, like the beetle, with this person, with Lilia de Guzman from the USCA, she's great because she has years of expertise, but she can also recognize that what she's seeing here is different than what she's seen in the mainland. And that's what we need. We need all the backup, all that experience, with fresh eyes to look at our problems
yeah.
and find solutions for Hawaii.
Good morning. Call a comment or question. Hello. Anyway, I lost it. Feel free to call back. Again, 524-1080 if you have a question for the panel as we're discussing bees, honeybees, and the threats that we are experiencing here, Nosema, small hive beetle, and varroa mite. But there are others, right? But, you know, we don't have to get into them, but just the it's...
Well, there are others that, and that's why it's really important that people understand not to bring in illegal shipments.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had this mite called Tropolaeteps, which is from Asia, and
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's in the U.S. at all yet. And that is a big problem. From what I understand, it's worse than the varroa mite. It'll cause even more damage to your colony. There's Africanized bees. If we get Africanized bees here, it will kill a lot of your outdoor pets,
mm-hmm.
scare off farmers, you know, pretty much wreck beekeeping as it is now. I mean, when you were in the colony, you weren't wearing any gloves.
No gloves.
You've seen how calm they are?
Right.
Yeah, but if you have an Africanized hive, that's going to be a different story.
Do we have the Africanized bee here?
No, we don't.
Okay,
yeah.
So that shows you how I trust you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm standing there with Howard with a swarm of bees, no gloves.
Yeah.
No suit,
yeah.
And I'm here within inches taking pictures. But I see him do it. I figure if he gets stung, I can move faster.
Yeah.
But again, it speaks to your knowledge and your expertise and trusting that. And I think that we need more of you. And in order to do that, there got to be some concerted effort and funding. Collaboration with the universities and with the Department of Agriculture. I was thinking on the way here, you know, I was thinking a little silliness. The bee, when the varroa mite came, I could see the bee dressing up and going, I float like a butterfly and I'll sting like a bee. But then introduced the beetle, and then now he's still, but his voice is a little lower, and now you've got the Nosema. He's not floating, he's not stinging, and he's leaving the hive and abandoning it and, and dying out. So it's
bees are in Hawaii are at a tough time right now. And you talk to every beekeeper out there, and from your ones that, like Howard saying, that have thousands of hives to your one beekeeper that has like two or three. And they've seen a huge change within the last 5 years.
Right.
Just change beekeeping, just new pests coming in.
Now, I saw the other day I was talking to a gentleman, and he said, well, flies and other insects can pollinate. He said that he sees flies on certain cactus. And well, true, because they do pollinate, but they have a rotten flesh. These plants are specifically designed to and give off a scent to attract, like Dudley or Lefebvre's in the cacti family. So can we rely on flies to take over where the honeybee?
Well, I'll let these guys speak in a second, but no, for a couple of reasons. Basics. They're not hairy enough.
Right.
So bees have special hairs. They're fussy. Whenever they visit a flower, they get showered in these, you know, pollen grains, and they can gather those and put them inside, you know, on their little legs and carry them. So they're meant, they're built to do this. They're built to be, you know, almost static sponges that collect pollen. So that's great. Flies are pretty smooth, have a few hairs here and there, and they will pollinate, and they will contribute. I won't deny that. But so they don't have the right physique for it. And second, they don't have the numbers. And when you move in hives, you move, you know, 25,000, 30,000, 35,000 bees to a spot. So there's no, I mean, if you have that many flies, you'll be in trouble. So there's nothing that can match the numbers that we can bring in when we bring honeybees. So in numbers and in just body shape and all the associated collecting, you know, things that they have, you can't match honeybees in that sense. And that's part of the problem, I think, that there's nobody else that can take over completely. In the mainland, there are some bees, that solitary bees that are like the leaf cutters that are here, that are very good and can be raised commercially and can be sold and people can buy them. But we don't have them here. You can encourage certain bees. For example, people who have lilikoi can use carpenter bees. They're big. And the lilikoi flower is very big, and you need something
very
big.
Very accommodating,
yeah,
too.
So that works. Either hummingbirds, or which we don't have, or carpenter bees would do a great job. And honeybees are almost too short for that flower. So, you know, there are certain things that you can compensate. But for the most part, no one can match the bees.
And the fly, I wouldn't want him, or a certain type of fly, especially the house fly, and this is what the gentleman said, I wouldn't want them coming into a beehive or on flower, because they not only they will feces and everything else and dead bodies, and whereas bees are not likely to be transporting.
A lot of the flies that help in pollination are from a couple of groups that are okay. They're, they're clean bugs, but hover flies. They almost look like wasps. Actually, it might be what this woman earlier was saying. They hover beautifully. They're gorgeous little bugs, but there's just not enough of them and not hairy enough. That would be my biggest concern.
And they can't afford the hair anyway, because they're fast flyers and they hover and they're beautiful, but beautiful to look at. You see one shining.
Yeah. You know, some of those are gorgeous, but there's just not enough of them and don't do the same job.
For the bees, too, because of their short life and, you know, huge turnover, the hive is driven to go out and collect pollen, whereas I'm not really sure about, you know, the flies.
We can do it tomorrow.
Maybe, but the whole, it seems like the honeybee was designed with this, you know, pollination in mind. When I do classes at schools, and when I ask the kids what's the most important thing that, you know, bees do for us, and the classes that are, you know, in the know say pollination, a lot of people will go honey, but they're designed for pollination, and plants are plants have evolved to attract, you know, certain pollinators. Because they're competing for the same insects. So,
well, one of the things with bees and this whole issue is there any light at the end of the tunnel with the resources you have right now? How do you feel? What's your opinion? Are we playing catch up? Do we have enough of, and also while speaking to that, there was a recent bill, I think it was heard on Thursday or Friday, regarding the registration of hives or colonies. So if you could speak to those two things, if you would.
Okay, regarding the future, well, you know, we definitely need to continue. You know, mm-hmm. this is not something that gets fixed right away. I think my biggest frustration right now is education. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to the public, mm-hmm. because we do a lot of outreach. We go to farms, we go to, you know, master gardeners programs, we go to ag fairs, things like that, and people are always very interested and very receptive. Unfortunately, as a research institution, you know, our funding comes usually earmarked to, you know, for research, you know, for maybe extension, but it's very limited. And there's not enough funding to do the education outreach that you need, like especially with, say, small children.
The agroecosystems, you have that project.
Yeah, so we do. We work with farmers, and we go, you know, we go to the field and we train farmers. So the farmers themselves train other farmers to mm-hmm. keep bees. We're also working with a school system, integrating basically bees and pollination at elementary school levels. And the people in my lab did a 6-week project with a school, and I'll let Scott talk about it. That mm-hmm. was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it showed how much interest there is there in the community and how limited we are in basically being able to reach them. So, Scott, tell them about that.
Yeah, so we, a group of grad students, we went and talked about the importance of bees, you know, in their life,
mm-hmm.
whereas from the fruit, you know, how they pollinate your fruit to how you can take care of bees, how to protect them. And that is what we find is the biggest reason why we think we can save the bees in the long run is mm-hmm. education. So getting the people to know how they impact your life and what you can do to promote, you know, healthy bees.
Mm-hmm.
And a cool thing that you can actually look at, and we're talking about how you can, like, carpenter bees can also help pollination, is if you go to the Urban Garden Center in Pearl City, you'll actually see these artificial nests that we've helped collaborate with, and they actually built these bamboo nests that are hanging under trees, and so people can see how you could promote bees in their gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a, you know, what we're finding is for the long term, that is going to be one of the more important aspects in keeping our bees healthy here in Hawaii, is people knowing what to do and what not to do. And like you said, don't spray. And mm-hmm. the biggest thing, we know people still use pesticides mm-hmm. to keep, you know, to keep their plants healthy. And we understand that. And what we recommend to our public is to use less toxic mm-hmm. chemicals. So mm-hmm. if you can go with, like, insecticidal soaps, that helps a lot. And the other biggest thing is to change your practices, is if you have to use it, please spray at night,
mm-hmm.
because that's when you don't see bees
mm-hmm.
in your gardens, because they're all back in their colony, you know, resting up for the next hard day that they have to spend out there.
And farmers have learned that the hard way. The first set of farmers that we gave colonies to called us within a week, panicking because they saw a lot of dead bees. And it was simply a mistake that they put fertilizer in their irrigation drip.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very dry area, and the bees were drinking water from that. And they got sick from even fertilizer. So they figure out a way to provide water to the bees so they wouldn't have to drink it from the irrigation drip.
Mm-hmm.
But is that awareness? Before, they would, you know, they relied on wild bees. They would have never even crossed their mind that what they did in the fields had a direct impact to the bees.
Mm-hmm.
Now that it's so hard to get them, they're golden, they're precious. You know, they're going to watch out for their health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people in general have a kind and an interest, you know, to these insects that we could, in a sense, nurture a little bit more if we had more educational programs.
Mm-hmm. So what else can the public do just before, not to do with the beekeepers, what can they do
themselves
other than not spraying at night or whatever?
Like what I like to promote, and I know Howard likes this too, is to actually, if you can support your local beekeepers, like, as well as like you're supporting your local farmers, like how everyone says, you know, buy local. A thing besides buying just, you know, your local fruits and vegetables is buy local honey.
Mm-hmm.
Because that will support the beekeepers invest a lot in their hives, and mm-hmm. because of these new pests, they always have to buy new equipment to help keep their hives healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So by investing in, you know, your local beekeepers, you'll help them, you know, get more bees essentially, and help, you know, and that in turn will help your farmers and in turn come back to you because you'll see, you know, nicer fruit in your markets.
Now, that's amazing. That should have been Howard's line.
Well,
help, send money.
Yeah.
but it is also important that the public knows what they're buying. So,
right.
You know, if they can support beekeepers that are doing it organically, that are doing it right, mm-hmm. that may be spending more money trying to take care of the bees in the right way, that will encourage them to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
If they go and buy the cheapest honey possible without really being concerned how it was produced,
mm-hmm.
they're undermining that, you know, sort of greater, you know, conservation aspect mm-hmm. of beekeeping.
Now, you know, advocating for the local beekeeper and the bee grower, what's in place to ensure that people are not buying honey from Piru, California, and bringing it in and claiming? Is it left up to the ethics of the beekeepers, or how does that work?
Yes, it's left up to, you know, the beekeeper, and this is why we, you know, we go, if you're buying, you know, local honey, you know your beekeeper,
mm-hmm.
Know who's producing it. I don't think there's anybody, I may have heard rumors maybe a couple of years ago about people using 51% Hawaiian honey and 49% mainland honey, but I think mm-hmm. No beekeeper I know would do that just because the risk to the good name of our, you know, our product.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with Scott about, you know, supporting the beekeepers. It's real important. Beekeeping, when I first started in 2004, beekeeping in Hawaii was really nothing more than putting boxes on hives and taking boxes off.
Mm-hmm.
And while I read about the pains that the mainland was, you know, going through, I wasn't sharing it. And in 2007, when the mite showed up, it's like, oh my goodness, things are a lot harder. Now I have to actually go into the hives more often. I lose hives more often. I need treatments for these things. When the varroa hit, a lot of our boxes are kind of weather-worn, and all of a sudden we needed new, you know, new screen bottom boards. And I sometimes say it's cheaper to ship stuff to the moon than it is to ship it to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So we would look at a bottom board from the mainland that might cost, you know, $10, but it costs us $10 to get it here. And same is true with, you know, a lot of the treatments that are available is we don't produce them here. It's all in the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And shipping is expensive. So, you know, we're faced with increasing costs because of, you know, treatment. We're finding that in the past, in 2004 when I started, there were some hives that I would go out every 3 months, every year. And now I'm finding with varroa, we have to go out every 6 weeks and check on them. And the small hive beetle, I'm hearing people say every week. And I'm spending a lot of times, you know, in hives.
And this going there is intrusive, you're opening up the hives.
Opening up the hive, we're stressing the hive out. They're under enough pressure from varroa and, you know, and the small hive beetle, and then we're opening up, we're smoking them. Our fuel costs, because, mm-hmm. You know, we're traveling from Kailua to Eva almost on a daily basis. You know, our fuel costs are going up just in terms of the amount of fuel that we're burning, but also as, you know, oil prices go up, we're seeing gas prices go up. Oil prices affect a lot of the products that we, you know, use, our containers. These all have to be brought in from, you know, the mainland. So, there's a lot of pressure on, you know, the beekeepers, and most of us, when we have bees out in farms, small farms and even large farms, it's not like the mainland where we're getting so much per hive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing this for the products of the hive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real important that we have a good market for our, you know, our honey, because that enables us to keep the bees going, you know, to try to increase our, you know, the number of colonies we have. We're also supporting, you know, some of the Big Island queen mirrors. Not
mm-hmm.
much, but, you know, it's it just helps, you know, all the way around.
Let me ask you this real quick. Honey here in Hawaii is good, and because we have some great plants and all. What are some of the top choices of flavors? Christmas berry, or if you would, what are some of the...
Our best seller is actually a Big Island Christmas berry, which is a obnoxious invasive species. humans hate it. And there are some people that won't even try Christmas berry honey because, you know, just because it is so invasive and mm-hmm. obnoxious. But the bees love it. It has a small flower, and they just... And it makes a really great honey.
Mm-hmm.
Leihua is a top seller, and because it's a uniquely Hawaiian honey, that has a very unique flavor to it, and you won't find it, you know, anyplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Macadamia nut honey is a real popular, monofloral honey that people really, you know, because it kind of macadamia nut. People think of that, you know, the islands for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then our multiflorals are really good.
Yeah. Dr. Villalobos, we're coming down to the end. Is there anything you want to say? And real quickly, all of you, give your contact information again. So, and we got about 2 or 3 more minutes.
Howard, you want
to? Once again, I'm Howard McGinnis. I'm a Oahu beekeeper, been beekeeping since 2004. Can I plug my markets?
You can plug your market.
You can find Nalo Mele honey at the KCC Farmers Market, 2nd, 4th, 5th Saturdays. You can find us at Haleiwa Farmers Market every Sunday, Malalani Farmers Market every Sunday, Hawaii Kai on Saturdays, Kailua Farmers Market on Thursdays, and St. Clement's Market in Mikiki and Wilder. And I have to profess ignorance. I'm not really sure what Thursdays we're doing that on.
Okay.
And thanks for having me on your show.
Anytime.
And yeah, thank you again. And my name is Ethel Villalobos, and I'm part of the UH Honeybee Project. And you can find us on the web. If you Google the UH Honeybee Project, it should take you there.
Mm-hmm.
The lab for number is 808-956-2445.
Mm-hmm.
And we are also very interested if you are involved with a school project or anything like that. We would like to hear from you. And we're, again, very interested in education and outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And my name is Scott Nicaro. I'm with the UH Honeybee Project. Same contact number again, 956-2445. My last thing is just if everyone out there, whoever's listening out there, can just be aware. I mean, our bees are still in crisis mode, mm-hmm. I would say, right now. And whatever you guys can do, whether it's supporting beekeepers, changing your gardening practices, will go a long way to help mm-hmm. promoting bee health in Hawaii.
Well, if I want to thank all of you. And anytime, if you want to come back, we're not here to entertain anyone. So I'm hoping the listeners out there, and just give it a shot in the arm, because what I observed that day was quite impressive. But also watching how the University of Hawaii is there at the plate, ready to knock the ball out of the park, but they're giving you a little short bats. And pitching. So, you know, I hope that call to action for my listeners out there is contact your legislators and ask them, and nothing else, have ask for a hearing or a session to look into, quantify this, because what I saw as it's very alarming, but I already witnessed a lot of it, the decline in the bee population, not knowing. So thank you all for joining me, and I'll see you next week. You can pick this up at Carol at carolcox.com. Remember, don't spray, let them stay. So if you see a bee colony They're not going to bother you unless you bother them, and more than likely they won't bother you then. So let's give them a break. And again, for your number, if the case there's someone needing for colony removal real quick, what is the number?
It's 808-258-7296. And I'm island-wide. I'll travel to Waianae. I'll travel to Hawaii Kai. If you've got a swarm of bees, I'm interested in grabbing them.
All righty. Well, thank the three of you. I appreciate you joining us. And we'll post this at carol@carolcox.com, C-A-R-R-O-L-L. Aloha.
Hey, Carol, you want to do a live...
And tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.